The job of the blender is to combine these elements in such a way as to produce an overall flavour.
A wider repertoire of different beverages than ever before.
I think one of the most interesting breweries, and certainly one of the most interesting origin stories for a brewery in Australia.
Single malts, blends, grain whiskies, bourbons and more.
If you want mezcal to be sold around the world, then unfortunately you're going to have to make a compromise.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Founded by three friends with a background in drinks and hospitality, Bondi Liquor Co. is the first operating distillery in Sydney's eastern suburbs. Co-founder and distiller Ben Stevens has experience in both sales and production, having previously worked at Young Henry's, Clare Valley Brewing, and Carlton and United Breweries. He joins us this episode for a chat about the challenges of being the first in a new area where the authorities are unaccustomed to alcohol production. We'll explore the Bondi Liquor Gin range and the pros and cons of tying your brand name to a globally recognised place like Bondi Beach. First up, though, I asked Ben about the origin story behind Bondi Liquor Co.
So look, there's three of us involved in Bondi Liquor. We're a little distillery down in Bondi. We're the first active alcohol production licence approved by Waverley Council. And then the three of us have sort of been in and around the alcohol industry for, I'd probably say, a combined 20 to 25 years. Myself, in a sales and production capacity. One of my business partners, Adrian, has owned and managed a little winery and craft brewery down in South Australia, which he sort of recently separated from the partnership. And then Will, our third partner, is more of our front of house guy and sort of been around venues for a long time and owns a little pub in Sydney. I actually worked for Adrian in a general manager capacity for the little craft brewery that he owned.
And so was that Clare Valley Brewing Company? I think I saw it on LinkedIn.
Yeah, correct. It was, yeah. So when I moved on from Clare Valley to another role, Adrian had always said that he wanted to do something again with me. And then Will and I got talking, and Will had sort of expressed his interest in opening a second venue somewhere in the eastern suburbs where he'd grown up, and he really liked the idea of Bondi. And I sort of said I'd definitely be interested if there was going to be some sort of alcohol production capacity involved in it.
And what was your entry into the industry?
It's a bit of a long story. In my early 20s, I went across to Canada just on a working holiday and ended up, so we're talking 16, 17 years or 18 years ago now. And my first job there was in a bar of a little brew pub called Canoe Brew Pub. And this was well before the explosion of craft beer over here. So I had no idea what an IPA was or a honey brown lager or everything that these guys were pouring. And I just fell in love with beer. So when I came home to Australia, it was sort of I made it my mission to get into the industry in one way or another. I took a job managing the front of house of a little craft brewery down in Frio called The Monk. Where Justin Fox, who is very well known to a lot of people in the industry, was actually the brewer. I did what I could to help out Justin, you know, when he was away, just taking grabs and filling kegs and just those sort of really entry-level brewery tasks. And I guess my passion for alcohol production evolved from there. I ended up working for CUB for a long time, and they're huge on upskilling their staff. I was in sales and marketing, and they were always, do you want to do a sales and marketing course? And I said, no, I'd love to do a production course. So they put me through the same qualification with the Institute of Brewing and Distilling that they put all their production guys through. So I guess that's my formal qualification in alcohol production. The opportunity arose for me to go across and do a bit of work with do some work with Young Henry's, and look, it's a great brand to work for. And if you ever had time to sit down with Rich, Dan, or Oscar, their love and understanding of this industry is unparalleled.
Take me back to sort of the earliest days of when Bondi Liquor Co. was conceived. How long ago are we talking, and what was the sort of state of the craft spirits market in Australia at the time? Because things have evolved very quickly over the last few years, haven't they?
We've obviously been talking about it for a little bit of time, but the real bones of it got moving when we entered our first lockdown in sort of March 2020. The original discussion was, do we try to look at a brewery? And we'd spoken to the council. That was sort of looked like a bit of a no-go.
Why was a brewery more challenging? Sorry to cut in, but what was it about a brewery that you thought would be difficult in Waverley?
finding the space. Look, and when I say resources, part of it is money. It took us 10 months to get approved as a distillery. I've spoken to a brewery that's going to open down there soon, and they've been 4.5 months and 10 times the amount of money that we've put into this already. We just didn't have that in us.
And so a distillery was more, well, I won't say easier because it doesn't sound like it was easy, but more conceivable for the council. Why was that?
I guess keeping the EPA out of it. We're not fermenting on site, so there's no grey waste required. So that was part of the conversation, was that we wouldn't ferment because of all the cleaning regimes that were required. And I guess the perception of the council at that stage was that fermenting and that sort of thing on site was going to cause, you know, bad aromas in the neighbourhood. And you know, I don't want to say it was a compromise, but it's if I ever get a chance to open a brewery down there, I'll certainly look at it.
What you're describing that you've gone through with Waverley Council, it sort of sounds a bit like what some of the guys in the Inner West would talk about, the challenges that they were having 7 or 8 years ago. Why do you think that no one has busted down that barrier in that council area sooner?
I put it down to the fact there was a bit of change of legislation by the state government in late 2019. There'd been a few, or more than a few, you know, applications for a production license down there. From reading, and look, this is what I can ascertain, and I could be wildly incorrect, but in late 2019, the state government deemed all alcohol and cheese production, strangely, to be light industry, where previously there was no sort of determination from a state level about what artisan alcohol production was. So once they deemed it light industry, any building in any council area that was zoned okay for light industry, there was no council pushback to be able to say, no, you can't do this anymore. Before, it had just fallen under, you know, industry. And I assume that people went into Waverley Council and said, this is what we want to do. And they said, this is industry. No, this building is not zoned for industry. One little word in front of it seems to have changed everything.
And was it always going to be in Bondi what you wanted to do?
Yeah, look, we think so. I love the idea of being, Will wanted something down that way. He'd grown up not far from Bondi. He did want a venue down there. Adrian had also spent a fair bit of time in the eastern suburbs of Sydney. And we sort of went, okay, look, if we're going to do this, let's do it where there's no other alcohol production at the moment.
Were you sort of thinking that, you know, there was international potential for the brand, given that Bondi is a pretty sort of iconic destination for travellers, isn't it?
We'd spoke about it. You don't want to sort of get ahead of yourself, but we definitely had discussed the potential of, okay, well, you know, if you look at beaches that are, you know, world recognised, Bondi would be in the top five. There's words that are synonymous with Australia, and I believe Bondi is one of them.
Now, there is already another Bondi gin on the market. You're obviously aware of the other Bondi gin that's around. Is that not actually produced locally?
No, so that Bondi gin, there's actually a second Bondi gin about to come to market that we're aware of too, surprisingly. But no, look, it's produced by a company called Australian Distilling Co. They've got a couple of production sites nationally, but they effectively make gins named after any iconic place in Australia. Inspired by places in Australia. So they've got a Sydney gin, a Frio gin, a Bondi gin, a Gold Coast gin. The list could go on.
Yeah. And has that created some headaches for you guys in the market with just a bit of confusion?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm handling a bit of our wholesale stuff at the moment, so I continually find myself walking into bars and restaurants and they're like, oh, no, we've got your gin. And I'm like, no, that's not our product. And they're like, okay. And I guess the other big one you get a lot is, oh, cool, another Bondi name product. Where are you actually making this? Once you get down into the local area, that's probably more feedback than anywhere else. But there's a bit of parochialism down there from some of the businesses that go, okay, where are you actually making this if you're going to try to, you know, come and sell us on a local product?
Yeah. And, you know, do you see that you'll be able to sort of overcome that confusion that is there just by telling people about your story and hopefully people coming down and seeing the venue for itself?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's an education piece. So it's literally just getting in front of everybody and saying, okay, this is where we are and this is what where we are producing.
And it's one of the challenges with using place names, isn't it? Because there are sort of limitations to the kind of trademark protection that you're able to get.
Oh, yeah. You sort of just look at it and you go, well, we can never trademark anything to do with this. We can, you know, register a business name, but there's nothing to stop other people from jumping on, you know, and calling something very, very similar. I mean, like you said, there's already a Bondi gin and we've sort of gone with Bondi Liquor Co. So, you know, we did the same sort of thing.
Now, Bondi is obviously a really well-known suburb in Sydney, to say the least, but it's probably a bit polarising as well. Do you see that there is the potential for it to alienate the brand a little bit from some pockets of Sydney?
Yeah, look, it's a discussion we had, and it may not. For mine personally, if you're from somewhere, be proud of where you're from and tell people that that's where you're from. And I think, you know, if you're making something in somewhere and you're proud of where you're from, just scream it from the rooftops.
And, you know, as we were talking about, you worked at Young Henry's, for example. They're a brand that have really built themselves on the location of where their brewery is, being Newtown.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, Young Henry's, obviously the name of the brand is Young Henry's, as people know, but they're so proud and so parochial in Newtown. That's what they're known for, and they embrace that. And you only have to look at the pubs and the bars in the inner west to understand that actually resonated. Being from there was something that was important to them, and it was important to the people who they were trying to sell to and their local community. You can't be everything to everybody, James. And that's what we sort of looked at and went, okay, we've got a captive network of 325 bars and restaurants and in Bondi. So let's start with them, do something in the local community. And I've always found it strange that some people discount brands based on what they're called anyway. I think if the liquid stands up, then people will embrace it no matter what it's called, as long as it's not offensive.
Have you had a good reception from those accounts in Bondi thus far, considering that, you know, there can, because you have a hospitality presence, sometimes there can be a perception of, oh, you're competing with us in a hospitality sense?
We haven't had any negative responses. Obviously, you know, we'd probably like to be on a few more shelves than we are. And look, we're on a fair amount of shelves down there. I guess the hold up at the moment was once we sort of, you know, bars were closed, and once we sort of opened the world up in October, early November, it was more a come back and talk to us in the new year. We're not going to arrange stuff now. The one I thought that would probably be, you know, not the hardest to crack or you know, might be the most resistant because we are selling takeaway bottles with Bondi Cellars. They're a little bottle shop. They're a very well-known bottle shop in the area that's, you know, 300 metres from our doorstep, and they're actually our biggest account.
You've got a few gins in the range. So gin is kind of the flagship spirit. Is that going to continue to be the case, or will you be trying to make whiskey at some point?
Yeah, look, I think gin will always be the flagship. We don't have a ton of space down there, so I think I'd love to play around with a few little whiskey runs, but I just don't have the space to age anything, barrel anything on a commercial sense. And to be honest, the still's only 200 litres, so trying to do whiskey on that is almost a pointless endeavour. We'll play around with some, you know, some vodkas and some liqueurs, but a lot of them will probably just to be used through the bar in cocktails and things that are complementary to our gins.
Yeah, tell me about the production facility. Like, how big is your distillery, and then what about the hospitality side of things?
Yeah, so the place is actually an old Italian pizza joint that we gutted. So they had quite a large kitchen out the back. So we basically repurposed the kitchen to the distillery area and pushed the kitchen a little bit further back, as it was a two-stage kitchen. So at the moment, the production area is about 25 square meters, and we do. I've got a 200 liter still in there, and all production, packaging, and labeling and bottling and everything goes on in there. It's a tight squeeze, but for now it sees me through. And in terms of the hospitality offer, we've got it's a little sort of two-story, as I said, old repurposed restaurant. So we've got, I think it's licensed for 90. We've got about 20 personnel fresco area out the front, and a big long bar, and a little function space upstairs. It's sort of very summery, and you know, from what we're told, from what everybody comes in and says, it's a great sort of summery, you know, beachy vibe.
You probably haven't had too much uninterrupted trade at the venue. Tell me what the last 18 months or so have been like for you guys trying to run a business since the onset of the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, we only, as I said, we only took the space in September of 2020 after, you know, 10 months of approvals. We got fully approved on the 18th of June. Now, if anybody listening is in New South Wales, that was a week before lockdown. So 10 months of approvals to be shut a week later. Obviously, they're not reopening in October and not really knowing what the world was going to look like. It was almost just, you know, cover your heads and get through to Christmas and just do what you could. And it's only now, you know, that we've got a bit of clear air this side of Christmas that we have started to really sort of evolve that hospitality offering. You know, we'd sort of wanted to do some little entertainment things, trivia, stand-up comedy, different things, but we were sort of a bit hesitant to dip our toe in the water, not knowing whether we were going to be staying open. So all that sort of, you know, gin making classes, all that sort of stuff, so, you know, starting to kick off now, you know, in the next few weeks.
But have you had some good trade though on the weekends when you have been able to open relatively unencumbered?
Look, the first couple of weeks out of Christmas was tough. You'd look like you on the books you were going to have really good weeks, and then I guess with COVID spreading so rapidly, you'd go from going, oh, we've got, you know, a function and 60 people booked in on Saturday night to half those people cancelling because they had to isolate or they had COVID themselves. But surprisingly, I guess that was the other part of having a venue in Bondi, is there's a lot of foot traffic. So businesses have been good in comparison to a few other places we've spoken to.
Tell me about the gins that you've launched with. What were you sort of aiming to do? Because obviously, you know, such a crowded market and it's kind of tough to find an angle to cut through what's already out there.
We obviously wanted to launch with a few different products. I've seen people launch with one and I can only imagine how tough that would be. So obviously we wanted your standard London dry style gin, something that people are, you know, really accustomed to, and when they come into the bar, that's probably what they're looking to drink in a gin and tonic. So we've done the original dry gin, which is, as I said, a London dry style. It actually won a gold medal in the Australian Distilled Spirit Awards in early December. So that's been, you know, pretty well received for us. Just really clean and classic. I've always said, like, I'll only ever put 6 botanicals into any of our gins. I think that, you know, people get hung up on dumping more and more and more stuff in there, but you know, your palate just can't discern it. So it's as I said, it's just sort of your classic. There's obviously juniper, coriander. There's some angelic root, wattle seed, lemon peel, and cassia in the original dry.
So a little bit of an Australian angle there with the wattle seed.
Yeah, I'll always try to throw an Australian native into everything we do, and then obviously, you know, I've got a little chart of how we try to put together everything. Obviously, it's juniper, coriander. There's always needs to be a bit of a citrus element in there. Always something that, you know, complementary to the style of what you're trying to achieve. So that obviously is the angelic root, a native, which is a wattle seed, which complements the juniper quite well, and then there's some cassia in there. I think there's always a requirement for something to provide that sort of bit of warmth or heat at the back of the palate.
And then you've got a citrus gin and a rhubarb gin. Tell me about those.
It's my favourite of the three gins we make, and what it's become is probably our cocktail gin. It's mandarin and lemon myrtle, and then there's some ginger and river mint in there. But it's just become this great substitute for almost every cocktail we do, where it just takes the element of needing to put a dash of lemon juice out of it. And I guess through the lockdown, there was a bit of a takeaway margarita vibe in Bondi, and not having the ability to do a margarita, our business partner actually came up with what we've termed a gin margaritini, and it goes perfect in there. And we did a little pop-up burger joint out of the restaurant, and we're probably selling 100 of these margaritinis a week in little jars for people to take home and drink at home.
And what about the rhubarb gin?
Look, the rhubarb gin, it's a stolen family recipe from my partner's auntie, actually. We wanted to do a pink gin and we didn't know how we wanted to do it. I didn't want to do another sweet pink gin. I didn't think there was any differentiation from a lot of the stuff that was on the market if that was the path we went down. And then my partner's auntie, who lives up on the northern beaches of Sydney and Warriewood, had sort of continually said to me how she used to make this rhubarb gin at Christmas time. And I finally said to her one day, I said, well, make it for me. And so that's how I stole the recipe. Basically, we take the London dry gin and steep it on rhubarb 2 weeks post-distillation. It sort of gives us this sort of great depth of colour and this sort of salty, tart and earthy flavour. Everybody looks at it and reads rhubarb, and the perception is that it's going to be sweet because everybody cooks rhubarb with a whole heap of sugar and they think rhubarb's sweet, but it's not. It's salty and tart and quite fruit punchy. It's trying to translate the message at the moment. Like in a retail sense, everybody loves it and puts it on shelf, and if it goes okay in the bar, it's definitely our number one seller.
Now, I noticed on the Australian Distillers Association Facebook page a little while ago, you were putting together sort of a group purchase of juniper. Tell me about what kind of drove you to do that, like buying juniper in bulk direct from overseas.
I ended up probably taking it over from somebody else. And Andrew, who owns Moontide Distillery up in Broome, was the man behind it originally. I think it was driven off of late in 2020, I want to say. I'm so lost on the years these days. There was a massive, huge juniper shortage where people couldn't get their hands on juniper through the normal channels of Australia. And I think it was just driven out of necessity to want to be able to have a relationship with the importer as opposed to a wholesaler in Australia. So Andrew had originally posted about it, and I sort of jumped in there. And obviously being in Broome, organizing the logistics of it from up there, it didn't seem to work out. And the guys who were bringing it in from had basically said they wanted to do with somebody in Metro Sydney because that was their port of destination that made the most sense. So I guess I pseudo took over it, and then it's just grown from there. We're on to our third shipment at the moment, and we've sort of gone from bringing in a little amount to see what the quality and whether we wanted to proceed with it. And it's sort of now grown to, there's probably 10 or 11 distilleries in there, and everybody's sort of buying on the 75 to 100 kilo quantity at a time.
That doesn't sound like an enormous amount. So the distilleries involved are not sort of huge distilleries.
They're not. They're decent sized ones. I would say most people getting through this are going to be you guys probably making, 15, 20,000 bottles of gin a year.
Yeah, sure. In spite of all the challenges that the last couple of years have thrown up, how are you sort of feeling about things at the moment?
It's a bit of a, what day is it today? Yeah. Sometimes I wake up and I'm like, things are great. And then sometimes I wake up and think, how are we going to make it through today? We have some great wins, and then I guess everybody's not working on our very, very urgent time frame of trying to get things moving. So, you think you've picked up something really good in a wholesale sense, and you're like, okay, but it's still a month away. And look, the overall of the business is that we're all pretty positive about the direction it's going. We think we've got the branding right. We think we've got good products. We're positive about it, but I think you've also got to be realistic. So you've got to have that part of you that levels you and keeps you grounded to the point where you go, okay, we've still got to work to make this thing work out, or it's not going to happen.
But have you had a supportive landlord through this period?
Yeah, really good. So he really helped us through lockdown, and he's done everything he can to help us get through, which is great. I look at some of the other bars in Bondi, and even with the help they're getting from landlords, just go, how have you guys survived? Obviously, we've got the wholesale that we can lean on to sort of supplement our income, but the last 2 weeks, I think it's shown some huge signs of bouncing back. Obviously, Bondi being such a tourist destination, I think we'll get a better gauge of where we are once the borders open and we start to see some tourists back in town as well.
Awesome, mate. Well, thanks heaps for your time and for telling us the Bondi Liquor story, and good luck with pulling through these difficult times.
Thanks for having me.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson. Like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.